Check, check, check. Kitty, check, check, check. All right. Everything's back to normal.
All right.
Use me. Lose me.
Oh, we're recording now?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. Did you start the...
Yes.
Okay. Hi.
Hello.
So we missed last week's show because we decided to take on a project.
Yeah, we harvested the hops and...
Jeff, you know, has his hop trestles, so...
Yeah.
How many we had? A big tote bag full of Cascade hops. I don't know how many.
It was like 91 ounces.
Okay,
or maybe more. Maybe it was 100 ounces. Wet, and yeah. I didn't feel like drying them's easy. Packaging them is a pain in the ass. Mm. Like last year, I dried them and then took them to a homebrew club meeting and gave them away in bulk, mm-hmm. wholesale, basically, so I didn't have to package the damn things. This year, you know, I thought, you know, let's make beer with them.
Yep.
It's a bit of an ambitious project. I didn't get to bed till very late.
Because you put the kids to bed before we actually started. So we started around 9 o'clock at night and
I haven't brewed beer in a year.
Not only that, but so a couple things had to happen because first we needed to get the water up to temperature. Then we needed to make our mash, because we weren't using an extract, we were going to do an all grain bill. Mm-hmm. And you had some extract, but I mean, what you had, we just made a pale ale out of what you had around.
Right, right. I mean, we had to set up the brew house, we had to formulate a recipe,
right,
and then we had to brew the beer. And I hadn't brewed in a year, so all my time-saving optimizations had been forgotten.
Right.
So there was a couple of times where we wasted more time than if I was nice and oiled on the whole
Well, one thing is, when we were getting the water up to temperature, it went too high, and we had to mm-hmm. drop it down.
But we needed all that water anyway,
yeah.
So...
It worked for the best. So what we did is we took mostly pale malt, a little bit of oats, and a little bit of chocolate malt in there to give it some color, and...
Yeah, it was about 2% chocolate yeah. malt, because I didn't have any caramel or crystal or anything. Yeah. And we didn't want it to be a porter... But we just wanted to give it some color, so yeah, 2%. I think it was like yeah. I was actually going for 1%. Greg liked the ProMash calculated color.
I like the
color
the calculated color the a little better. So we'll see. It looks dark in there, but as it was coming through, like mm-hmm. When we were putting into the fermenters, finally it looked fine. So we wanted to just overuse the hops. We did hops in the mash tun as we were extracting the malts. Mm-hmm. And how long did that take?
It takes an hour.
It takes an hour to get the sugars extracted. Then we didn't hop.
We did first wort hops.
Did we do first boil? Yeah.
No, before boil. We put some in the kettle before the boil when the wort was running into the kettle.
Oh, okay. All right, so we did first worting. Then 30 minutes.
Well, we did a 90-minute boil.
Right.
We didn't add any hops when boil started. We added our bittering hops at 60 minutes from the end of the boil.
Right.
So it boiled for 30 minutes with just the first wort hops in there. And then, well, I guess there was hops, right? So, I mean, there was still bitterness, but they weren't freshly added. And then we added hops at 15 and at zero.
Right, we added hops post-boil. So then...
Well, adding a flame out isn't too unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we added them then as well. There were so many hops in the kettle. We added a pound of hops each time.
Yeah.
Well, technically 15 ounces of hops each time, but...
It reminds me, I remember those Sam Adams commercials where they say, we put a pound of hops in every...
every barrel.
every whatever they however they make. And it's right. Yeah, we made 10 gallons and put in like 3 or 4 pounds of hops.
No, like five.
5 pounds of hops. It was... And they're like little sponges, too. They're not dry. They were wet, so...
While we were running the wort through the chiller, I have this like stainless steel fry basket that's repurposed for whatever I could use it for in the brewery, right? And so I was, as the wort was running off, I was scooping hops out of the kettle, putting them in this basket and smushing them
right.
to get the wort
and trying to
out.
Do it as sanitizingly
as sanitary
possible.
As possible, right.
And then when we pitched the yeast into the fermenters, one of them didn't start.
Yeah, I only had one pack, so... This entire recipe was off the cuff. It's with stuff I had in the pantry, right? and I only had one pack of my Saffil emergency yeast. I did have a smack pack of Y yeast, British ale yeast, but it expired 2 years ago. It was best by 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we smacked it. It seemed like it was giving us a little bit of life during the brew session, so we pitched it anyway. But it didn't take off. So we brewed Saturday night. Tuesday, when I came home from work, I was going to stop at the homebrew store and buy yeast on Tuesday, and I had forgot on the way home.
Well, there was a lot going on that Monday. We can talk about that.
Yeah. Well, it was actually Tuesday, wasn't it?
Was it Tuesday?
Tuesday's the day the internet broke. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, actually, I was talking to the guy from the register
right.
on the way home. That's why I forgot about stop at the homebrew
right,
store,
because yeah.
I was talking to him on the phone. And so when I got, actually, so I was like, oh, do I turn around? And that's when I got the idea of just racking some fermenting wort from mm-hmm. one fermenter to the other one to kickstart it. And I probably racked quart, 2 quarts, something like that, to the other one. And within a few hours, you could see some life. And then next morning, it was going from whole hog.
So. Yeah, it's going crazy in there right now. It's looking good. And the fact that nothing was going on means we probably did a pretty good job sanitation-wise, right? I mean, because...
Well, I mean, bacteria is not going to give you as much show as yeast does, right,
right?
When it's doing things. But we can just hope that it wasn't... I'm not too worried about...
We did pretty good sanitation.
I'm not too worried about a 3-day lag like that. We've had that before. You know, that's part of... Don't worry, relax, I have a homebrew type mantra, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's lags, if you're reasonably good with sanitation.
So yeah, so...
It smells interesting. we'll see if this thing turns out to be any good. But Greg asked me, you know, like, what's your best guess of what we're going to get? And I don't have any delusions we're going to get, like, a world-class
right.
harvest ale or anything. If I had to put money on it, the defect we're going to taste the most is it's going to taste very vegetable-y, you know, like, a bag, like, because there's so much vegetative matter in the kettle
right, yeah.
that I think we're going to have some chlorophyll flavor, you know, it's going to be like a bag of long clippings type stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what I think we're going to notice.
It will definitely be interesting. I'm curious to see where it goes. We didn't do a gravity rating, unfortunately, on it, so we're not going to know.
Well, I mean, it's all grain, right? We got about as much runoff as we had expected. So it seemed like we had a pretty good mash conversion. But yeah, since I didn't take an original gravity, I have no idea how strong, how good how efficient my mash was. But, you know, it doesn't matter. We're making beer.
Yeah.
We're making a beer I'm never going to make again.
Right.
I mean, even if it turns out awesome, I'm not going to make it again simply because there's no crystal malt in it, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not going to roll those dice again. So.
No, I understand. It was a cool thing to do. And I had a ton of fun doing it. It was a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, yeah, we were up till 3:30 in the morning.
You know, I forgot how much I missed home brewing. I think I caught the bug again.
Mm-hmm. I noticed you had some honey, because I was looking there. You bought some honey. You're making a mead.
I did. I bought a honey kit a while back. And the reason I haven't made it yet is the... You basically have to schedule out your next month, like, with care and feeding of the mead.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, I don't have time for that right now, when the kit came, right? But, you know, it's honey. It freaking stays. It's not like it's going to go stale or anything.
Right.
So, you know, I'll probably make the mead here sometime.
Or you could use that honey in a beer.
No,
you can't use all of that. I mean, that's a lot of honey.
No, I'm going to make a mead. I don't like honey beers anyway.
Mm.
What's the best honey beer you can think of? Exactly.
No, I mean, it can be used as a, you know, as another sugaring agent.
Mm-hmm, I know. But...
But...
Why? That's my opinion, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to waste
something,
it.
Something to try.
I'm not going to waste it in a beer when I can make a mead.
So, yeah. But yeah, 3:30 is when everything ended. And I just had to drive home.
Yeah.
But it was a blast. I love doing it. So if you want to do it again, I'm absolutely mm-hmm. up for it. And it was also great because it was super moon night. So it was partially the entire night, even though we were doing it outside and, you know, we had the lighting of Jeff's outdoor garage lights. We also had the rest of the night was sort of lit up by the moon.
Right.
It's a pretty... I mean, supermoon's only, what, 12%? It's a difference between, I think...
2% bigger.
2% bigger.
But there's more area, so it is it is probably brighter, right?
Yeah.
Times pi.
Right. It's the difference between what... between a 16 or 16 inch pizza and a 16 and a half inch pizza. That's the difference. So
Superman.
But it was bright. It was bright and impressive.
Yep. So yeah, lots going on in the news this week.
Oh god. There's so much going on. It's there's terrible things happening.
Yeah. Pretty much everywhere.
And Robin Williams goes and kills himself, and just a bad news week. But the fun part was when the internet blew up.
I don't know if I can call it fun.
It wasn't fun for you.
No. At least it wasn't my fault. It could have been a lot worse.
Right. It was just... So if you noticed this Tuesday... What was it? So we're recording this on the 16th. So it was... Whatever, what's Tuesday? What's wrong? One calendar. So it would have been the 12th. There was, you may have noticed, it didn't make a lot of news, but you may have noticed, especially in the morning, some slowness on the internet.
Right.
And some places you just couldn't access at all. One of the major things that got hit was LastPass.
They never did, at least unless they put out a report in the last day or so, they never did come back and say it was BGP routing. It was still a data center outage.
Right.
So I don't know.
But it could have been their data center.
But they reported it starting at the exact same time my firewall started seeing the internet blowing up, right? Mm-hmm. So
it was all related to a silly little technical thing.
Yeah, I told you the other day that, you know, I saw that Reddit thread. And actually, the guy who posted that Reddit thread, he's Matt Provost. He's our UK... SE works with Damien.
Oh. Huh.
So he's like, I posted that. I'm like, indeed you did. I just never looked at that. But anyway, the one thing that made me so mad was that someone ELI5'd it, right? And I never knew what this was until, you know, Greg told me about it. And it just pisses me off because someone's asking to have it too simplified, in my opinion, right?
Well, I mean, the idea came from, or I don't know if it came from, but the thing they used to represent it when I first heard of ELI5 was a scene in The Office where Oscar's trying to explain an accounting thing to Michael, and Michael says, you know, explain it to me first. And he says, okay, you dumb it down a bit, and he decides to say something. So explain it to me like I'm 10, and he tries something, and then explain to me like I'm 5. And Oscar's like, okay, daddy wants to have this much, and mommy wants to have this much. It was...
However, I maybe it was useful, because as I was like, you can't simplify it that much, actually I thought of a way to explain it like you're 5, right?
Yeah.
And it would be something along the lines of, imagine a phone book has a fixed number of pages in it, and it can only fit so many people in it, and you can't add another page, right? And the phone book got full, so not everyone could fit in the phone book, right? That's what happened,
right? But the complication is, lots of people had different versions of the phone book, some with some of the names, some with some of the other names.
Yeah.
So that is where that.
Well, I mean, there's well, yeah, there, I mean, there's all kinds of.
Yeah.
Well, that's the root of the problem, right? I mean, there's who knows how a specific router is going to behave, right? It's much harder to predict. It depends on how the code was implemented, right? To predict how the router would behave in this situation. But yeah, so a default for a lot of Cisco routers had enough room for 512,000. I don't know if it was 512,000 even, or if it was 512K, you know, 1024 type.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably that 512 times 1024,
right,
whatever number that is. That's how many pages were in the phone book. And on Tuesday morning at about 3:45 Eastern time, someone plugged a router into the internet somewhere and blew up the internet.
Now, I like ELI 5 to a certain extent because, yeah, the pressure of trying to make it understandable, if you can do that about something, then...
But the problem is, even this phone book thing, Allison 6, and she still wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
She doesn't get what that means.
ELI 5 is... Five is still a little low. I mean, for real comprehension. So ELI. So people say ELI 10 sometimes, because at 10 you can get these concepts. But yeah. When somebody, I did respond once to a ELI 5.
I think you told us about it, right?
Or I may have. It was someone asked the ELI 5, what's the difference between special and general relativity? And I said, okay, like your 5, special relativity is about time. General relativity is about gravity. That's basically all you can say.
Right. So, yeah. But there wasn't much news about it on Tuesday, and I was trying to see what was going on. I wanted to figure out what the internet was doing about itself being broken. And there was a little bit on some network admin mailing lists and stuff talking about, like, today's the day that, you know, we hit, started calling it 512K day. But there's really nothing. And then there was a dude from the Register who had a story about how his Canadian ISP, Shaw, was having a nationwide routing problem, but no details on it. So I sent him all the links that I had, right? I'm like, it's probably this, you know, the 512K routing thing. And I sent him some good stuff. And he wanted to know if I could talk. I said, I'm not an expert in BGP routing or anything like that. But he won't talk anyway, so I talked to him on the phone. He was trying to get me to comment on some deep packet inspection nonsense. In the bottom part of his story, remember where we mentioned the DPS?
Something, yeah.
He was trying to get me to comment or corroborate on that. and then he was going on this IPv6 rant about how IPv6 doesn't solve it because there's even more routes or... I don't know. He definitely didn't seem... it is the Register, right?
Yeah, the Register has an agenda.
Yeah, and it differs...
The Register is the InfoWars of, IT.
Yeah, it kind of... as I'm talking to the guy, I'm like, this isn't... You know where you're going. You're just trying to find the information to write a certain story. You know? And it wasn't very journalistic. And I knew... The Register wasn't the New York Times, right?
Yeah.
But it just still, when you talk to the person, it kind of shook me that, you know, the way he was aiming his questions and his agenda.
Well, that's yellow journalism. I mean,
I'm not allowed to talk to the press anymore.
Oh, you got.
I didn't get in trouble, but I'm not allowed to talk to the press anymore. What if he had. Use the quote to make it sound like I was criticizing Cisco, right? Mm-hmm. And we would, if we had pending Cisco deals or something like that, right? That's the worry, right? So,
yeah, I understand. It's understandable, but and I bet they would, you know, there. It's just that they want to know when you're doing any press stuff,
yeah.
Because you know they you know if the New York Times is doing a profile on Veer. Then they'd be like, yeah, talk to the press.
Yeah, I mean, some of the people thought they liked it, right? I mean, one of the VP of support liked it. One of the marketing people, you know, they both thought it, you know, it got our name out there, showed that Veer's admins, you know, were on top of things. You know? So they liked that part of it, right? It's just the other people didn't like the potential risk of...
Yes, yeah.
Of getting quoted in the Register.
They don't want to... They don't want to continue to feed this particular dog and have it keep coming back because that can cause problems. It's essentially what the problem is. It's like, all right, that's fine. We did it once.
Don't do it again.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, so we got that one covered. Do you remember back when we were talking about inertial mass and... that things, you know, things fall in the same rate in gravity.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why a heavier thing falls at the same speed as a light thing is because they both have to overcome their inertial mass. And
okay, right.
The interesting thing was that those things were identical.
Right, and that's what I remember was talking about, right? Yeah. It's fascinating that it works out that way, right? That the acceleration due to gravity on a mass, an object with mass X, the ratio to overcome the inertial mass is equal no matter what mm-hmm. the mass value is.
Right? And I wasn't sure when you were asking, you know, is that absolutely true? And I wasn't sure. I said, you know, there might be a difference. But then I was reading some things later and it made me come to the realization that, of course, they're the same. That's what Newton figured out, right? Because
right.
F equals ma, and F equals g times m1, m2 over r squared. That means these Fs are the same. Mm-hmm. So ma equals g over m1, m2, r squared. So they're equivalent. Exactly. Now, right. Newton didn't know why, mm-hmm. but he did know.
Well, that was more of my question is, you know, why, you know. But I don't know where to take this, but it's just one of those things that's fascinating. It's like,
yeah,
you know, why, you know, just one of those nature things. Like another one is, why can a table have three legs but not two? You know, I mean, that one's kind of easy to answer, but it's a interesting property of nature, right? That, you know, three is stable at a, you know, three and four leg table, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? Where there's no, you can't have a two leg table. It's like,
well, you could, almost, but you'd have to...
would have to be balanced. It's not a stable entity,
it's not
right?
a stable position.
Yeah, and, you know, almost like magnetic monopoles or, you know, things like that, right? It's just one of those things of nature, but it's a curious one. I mean, even if it's not a heavy one, right? It's like, yeah, you have to have a three-leg table. And it's just like,
yeah.
It's the smallest number of legs you can have to make a table work.
Well, all the really interesting questions in science, you know, get to at some point. You're just like, I don't know. It just works out that way. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me. It was one of Shane's friends. We were talking on Skype, and he invited one of his friends in, and he asked me to explain quantum mechanics in 2 minutes, and
I'll get back to you in 6 hours.
Yeah, I kind of blah, 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 blustered my way through something, but looking back at it, I don't think it made much sense. Because I wanted to try to say it accurately, but saying it accurately means I don't actually talk about particles. I talk about fields and explaining what a field is, and that there are these perturbations in the fields, and there are eddies, and there are ways in which the fields... it all just becomes... crazy, but it got me just thinking about just some of the more interesting questions of quantum mechanics. I mean, there's the problem with quantum mechanics is not quantum mechanics. The problem is classical mechanics. We understand quantum mechanics to a degree that's basically unheard of. And I also want to point this out, quantum mechanics is a deterministic theory. It's entirely deterministic. It's second order differentials over with initial starting conditions. That's all it is. And it happens to have possible outcomes. But if you you start with something and you know what you're gonna end with. It's entirely deterministic. It's just you're running an operator. And this we talked about Hamiltonian a little bit with mm-hmm. Greg.
Right.
I should go into that too. But let me just get on this other thing. So the weird thing becomes, all right, so we can understand what one particle does, and it gets really complicated when you have two or three particles and more and more and more complex, but it's in theory physically totally calculable. So the problem is that there's this thing called the wave function. And we don't know what that is classically. And this is where all the weird interpretations come into play. Because if you take, because that's the, figuring out what this means to our world doesn't make any sense. If you take it as the original people who developed quantum mechanics, the Copenhagen interpretation, they said, okay, the wave function isn't real. It's just this artifact of us not being able to understand. And as soon as we probe it, we'll find out where the particle is in this area.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make much sense at all. I mean, why should something be total mystery, and then boom, you probe it, and it just collapses into one possible option. It doesn't make any sense. It's absurd. So other people try to come up with other things, like the Everett multiverse theory, which is that the wave function is real, completely real. It is an object. But when we probe it, it does this thing called decoherence, and all of the separate possibilities turn into separate realities, essentially. And we just are in one of those realities. Mm-hmm. So that means that there are infinite number of realities popping into existence an infinite number of times. That's another thing that's absurd. But the only reason why these are absurd is not because it's not because of the infinities involved or whatever. Because that sounds like an enormous and ridiculous thing, but there are plenty of enormous and ridiculous things in this universe. Mm-hmm. The absurdity is it's completely untestable. There's no way to find out whether any of these are real at all.
Right.
And so that's the weird defining line. We know how this quantum stuff works. We have a decent idea how this classical stuff works, but it seems to be the classical stuff is where we're hitting the the edge. So it blows me away. It's one of those things that we think we have a good understanding of something, but we don't understand it at all.
Right.
At the same time. you said nothing in the past.
That's okay. I mean, I'm listening. You're not boring me. I just don't have anything to add, really. I mean,
I'm glad you're not bored, at least.
Sure. No, I'm not bored. Not yet.
Oh, so the Hamiltonian. Greg said something on Twitter about... He said something he's saying to Hamiltonians. I guess there's an area called, like, Hamilton or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as soon as I saw that, I said, is it weird that I just thought of quantum mechanics? And he said, Hamiltonian? And he's like, why would you? And I said, okay, well, Hamiltonian is the... I explained it saying Hamiltonian is the operator in the quantum mechanical system that represents... the energy. But that people who don't know quantum mechanics don't understand what that means. So an operator represents the values of waves, essentially, of certain aspects of waves. What you have to do in quantum mechanics, because in quantum mechanics everything's a wave. And there are no, like, real particles. But so some other operators you have is you can have an operator of angular momentum, and you can have an operator of momentum. An operator of position. So an example of what the Hamiltonian does is best, I guess, described... I was thinking about a way to describe it, and I think I found a way. If I told you f of x is... Give me the function x squared, graph that. What's the graph doing? Well, essentially, the function is plot x on this graph for all the values, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Plot x squared for all the values of x, f of x for x squared. So that function is kind of like a little engine that's saying, all right, move through all the possibilities and show me what they are. So the Hamiltonian is like that function.
Okay.
It's a little engine that says, all right, move through all the possibilities and I'll show you what they are, representing the energy in the system, because the energy in the system is always going to stay the same in a closed system. So you can look throughout how the system will evolve and see what everything else will do.
Gotcha. Cool.
That's the Hamiltonian. Okay. And that gives the question, what is energy? That's another weird one.
Okay. Hit me with it.
I don't know. It's the singular driver of everything, apparently. But we don't know what it is.
I didn't know energy was such a mystery.
Well, how would you describe energy?
Well, okay, I think you were saying, you know, like, I can describe energy. Again, you know, describing an object with energy mm-hmm. as compared to one without or gaining or losing it, right?
Right.
But the energy itself is, well, I mean, the definition for energy is, I know what I want to say. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to say it, so I'm not too inaccurate the first time I say it, but it's the amount of energy allows, right? The energy is something that allows work to be done, right?
Or something. Right. That's the basic, but you're just saying, again, it's something that requires,
right.
I mean, a very specific definition that is used but doesn't actually get to the point of what it is energy is that which is conserved in interactions.
Right.
What is it?
Right. I'll think about that while we're drinking beers, and I will get back to you.
Yeah. Okay. There's more on this subject we can talk about, because I want to get to an Einstein thing too. So look forward to that after we get some beers in us.
Yeah.
If you weren't bored by this,
well, at least it'll be funny then. Funnier, maybe. Oh, make sure you write down that whole the Rush Limbaugh thing.
Oh yeah, I have that on here.
Okay.
Yep. And Bilk, I have on here.
Bilk? Oh.
Bilk was not the correct answer.
Has to be Bilk.